Welcome back. It's a Tuesday, the 10th day of January, 2023. I'm your host, Mark Call, and it's definitely a mixed bag of news out there today. The usual bad news in a world determined to go to hell in a handbasket. A little bit of good news, at least a few people are starting to resist it. And when you combine it all, I'll admit, it's kind of hard not to be somewhat cynical about it because of the obvious implications. But let's start here. A Brazilian senator named Marcos Duval says he now has evidence that the new leftist minister of justice, SIC, Flavio Dino, was informed about the threat against the government buildings in Brasilia and did, well, exactly what you'd expect from a leftist that knows it's coming and wants it to, nothing. Senator Duval plans to visit the gym where the protesters are being held without charges, without attorneys, or without basic amenities. Reports are that at least two of the as many as 2,000 people held in a reconfigured gymnasium have already died. Looks more than a bit reminiscent of that sports arena post-Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans. Anyway, the peaceful protesters, including a number of children and old folks, were taken to a gym and held without chargers or lawyers, also without toilets, food, or water, for over 16 hours. Again, two have reportedly already died. It's being called Lula's concentration camp, a.k.a. the Lulag, as well as a crime against humanity. Says a Brazilian senator, via the translation, the Minister of Justice was informed of the attacks the day before. The moment it started, he went to the ministry window, looked out, and did nothing. I've already started to find evidence, said Senator Duval, that President Lula was also aware of what was going to happen and did nothing, he tweeted, prompting Joe Hoft at the Gateway Pundit to ask the what should be obvious question. Is the international waste stream media and global socialist movement, a.k.a. the New World Order, the WEF, the Davos crowd, you name it, all trying to make Brazil's Sunday protests their own version of a January 6th event or Reichstag fire? He points to the occasional Cortex who called the protesters fascist and called for all of them to be punished. Just like January 6th protests, says Hoft, the far-left socialists don't want to discuss the reason why the people were protesting. They only want to punish. But in Brazil, there's information supporting the elections that are required to be available for review by the military for their role in election oversight, but which has never been provided. And the reason? Well, obviously, Lula would have been removed from office had it been. Frank Gaffney on Sunday called the protest Brazil's version of a Reichstag fire, saying that millions of Lula's opponents have protested and turned out peacefully in cities across the country for some 70 days, urging the military to intervene pursuant to its constitutional duty to exercise oversight of elections that have obviously been stolen, but they didn't act. And after Lula took office, January 1st, key government buildings in Brasilia were attacked, apparently by a combination of leftist provocateurs as well as supporters of President Jair Bolsonaro, who has denounced all of those responsible for the violence. Still, though, says Gaffney, like Hitler's Reichstag fire, count on the Marxists to use this pretext to suppress their opponents and, of course, freedom. There's a different kind of protest going on in Arizona, where members of the Arizona legislature and the Arizona Freedom Caucus turned their backs on the gubernatorial thief, Katie Hobbs, and walked out of her annual State of the State address Monday, and then slammed her in a new statement for the, quote, election riddled with violations of Arizona law and her embrace of the, quote, left's extreme woke agenda. They also criticized her preference to illegally legislate via executive order and her willingness to, quote, exploit the levers of power in our state. The senator, who's chairman of the Arizona Freedom Caucus, Jake Hoffman, even said that her far-left woke agenda, quote, elevates her actions, and this is probably an understatement, folks, to tyrannical. After the speech and the embarrassment, Hobbs hid from the media, just like she's hiding the theft, and in their statement following the protest, the Arizona Freedom Caucus members wrote, on the heels of an election riddled with violations of Arizona law that once again left Arizonans disenfranchised and lacking confidence, to put it mildly, folks, in our state's local governments, Katie Hobbs has now affirmed what many reasonably feared. This governor, SIC, has no intention of using her high office to correct existing corruption and restore the faith of Arizonans in their state and local governments. This reality, they continued, observable in both the words that the alleged governor spoke in her address, as well as those she omitted, is not only tragic for Arizonans, but indicative of the crisis point in which we find ourselves. We cannot trust the person occupying the highest elected office in our state to even acknowledge the very real problems that our constituents face, let alone endeavor to address them. And they promised to, quote, fight her extremism every step of the way. And in case you've missed it, this related story is important, but does need a bit of introduction. The gubernatorial thief, Katie Hobbs, mocking the oath of office. This is a private ceremony, no reporters allowed, to commemorate the theft of the Arizona gubernatorial election. It starts off when this pitiful excuse for a judge asks her to repeat, "Do you solemnly swear?" But she can't. She turns her head and laughs at that because she knows what's going to follow. And then the sycophant repeats it, and then you can hear what happened after that.
Kathleen Marie Hobbs, do you solemnly swear? Do you solemnly swear? Do you solemnly swear? That I will support the Constitution. Stop it.
Yeah, no kidding. The idea of actually supporting the Constitution is such a joke, and they've gotten away with it, that they can't help themselves. They burst out laughing. Stop it! Well, that should have been said before the farce was put in place, folks. The destruction of the country and the fact that they're getting away with it in broad daylight is hilarious to these people. From there, on we go to the U.S. House of Representatives, or is it? And that at least is an open question as we see what's happening. Now that Kevin McCarthy has picked up that gavel that he fought a lot harder for than he did the Constitution for these United States, and we'll see whether or not he's been properly chastened and will actually honor the promises he's made, or not. So far so good, but honestly, folks, I'm not sure how much that proves. But still, we have several stories. Update, says one from Christina Layla at the Gateway Pundit. The GOP-controlled House has now passed their new rules package in what's being called the first major test for Speaker McCarthy by a vote of 211 to 205. And that's all of the Republican votes. And as we've been talking, some of the things that are in it seem to have been telegraphed already, like the motion to vacate, perhaps the most significant concession McCarthy had to make in the rules package, that historic procedural tool that can be used to remove the speaker if he fails to do what he said he would. The rules include a select committee to investigate the, quote, weaponization of the federal government, and a panel that's expected to be part of the House Judiciary Committee, now expected to be chaired by GOP Representative Jim Jordan of Ohio, said Chip Roy, Texas Republican, was one of the chief negotiators for the conservatives. McCarthy agreed to give the subcommittee, quote, the kind of budget and staffing, at least as many, they said, as the January 6th committee. Quote, we get more resources, more specifically, more power to go after this recalcitrant Biden administration. Sick, said Roy. And there's also what's called the reinstatement of the Holman Rule. First adopted in 1876, it's a measure that allows amendments to appropriation bills to slash the salaries or fire specific federal employees. That would have been really nice to have over the last few years, don't you think? Or even cut specific programs. Tweeted Representative Matt Gaetz, this is what we've been fighting for. Referring specifically to seven bills that the holdouts were able to include in the now approved rules package, including one of them that was unanimously approved by Republicans Monday evening, rescinding funding for the 87,000 troop IRS standing army funded by the laughably misnamed Inflation Reduction Act to the tune of almost 80 billion bucks to the IRS over the next few years. That undisguised threat to, as Jefferson put it, harass our people and eat out their substance, which the Wall Street Journal later came out and said was intended to target the middle class, not to mention conservatives. But that, at least, is nothing new. I guess it's fair to quote McCarthy here. House Republicans, he said, just voted unanimously to repeal the Democrats' army of 87,000 IRS agents. This was our very first act of the new Congress because government should work for you, not against you. Hey, I'm glad to see at least for now he's parroting that line. And then he added, promises made, promises kept. But also in fairness, remember folks, nothing is actually accomplished until the Senate signs off on it too. And that's a far more difficult battle at this point, and it'll require equal chutzpah from those non-rhinos in the Senate to stand up to the evil ones there. And they're more openly leftist colleagues. Some of the other bills contained within the rules package included several of them intended to deal with abortion, including prohibiting taxpayer funding thereof, as well as the border, including bills to authorize the Secretary of Octung Homeland Security to turn away people crossing the border illegally and prohibit the Secretary of Energy, SIC, from sending our strategic petroleum reserves directly to communist China. They better hurry on that one, or the Biden regime will have already emptied it. Here's another related piece of ostensibly good news, this one courtesy of Jim Hoft in the Gateway Pundit. Kevin McCarthy told reporters on Monday that far-left communist so-called representatives Adam Schiff for brains, Eric CCP Buddy Swalwell, and Ilhan Omar will not be serving SIC on the committees that they previously used to sell out America, like intelligence and foreign affairs. You may recall Eric Swalwell famously had his liaison with Chinese spy, now evidently the late Fang Fang, Ilhan Omar broke federal immigration laws by marrying her brother. And, of course, Adam Schiff for brains is a serial liar and a favorite of the anti-constitutional far-left waste stream and anybody that hates the concept of a constitutional republic. And this particular promise, by the way, was made by McCarthy back in November, even before the most recent speaker battle. Said McCarthy, quote, Swalwell can't get a security clearance in the private sector. I'm not going to give him a government security clearance. Schiff has lied too many times to the American public, he said, to Punchbowl. He shouldn't be on Intel. And I've made all these cases before. It's not like it's anything new. Remember, he said, this is what Nancy Pelosi, this is the type of Congress she wanted to have. Now, quick aside here, folks, and seriously, what kind of a house would even allow absolute traitorous scumbags like this to be anywhere close to House intelligence or anything associated with national security? Good grief. But hey, we're still trying to get out of a hole that's been dug for a long time and is real deep at this point. But there seem to be some rhinos falling on their swords as well. Mike Rogers, after an outburst on Friday night having to do with Matt Gaetz and his failure to cave to pressure and vote for McCarthy as speakers, seems to have borne the fruit he deserved. As TGP put it, quote, Rogers was last seen early Saturday morning screaming, threatening, and lunging at Representative Matt Gaetz in the U.S. House of Representatives. He's now stepped down from the House Steering Committee. And Rhino and pirate lookalike Dan Crenshaw repeatedly threatened holdout Republicans, labeling them terrorists for daring to not support McCarthy early on for Speaker. Thankfully, he's been defeated by House Freedom Caucus member Representative Mark Green to be chair of the Homeland Security Committee. Here's more federal tyranny that the Congress isn't yet looking at. A so-called safety agency, yeah, the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission, is now considering a ban on gas-powered stoves, amid claims that they produce harmful pollutants and are a hidden health hazard. Yeah, natural gas stoves, which are still allowed in once-free America, they're using about 40% of homes in the U.S., they, says the U.S. CPSC, emit air pollutants like nitrogen and carbon monoxide and fine particulate matter at levels that the EPA and WHO, yeah, the World Health Organization, have claimed are unsafe. No, take your poison poke instead, you gullible ones. And they're linked to respiratory illness, cardiovascular problems, unlike the Zyklon B injection, cancer, and other health conditions. Good grief. So they want to ban something that you can use to cook food that they don't want you to have anyway. Obviously, they don't want you to have a gas stove to cook your bugs on. The goal, says the piece here from TGP, is to replace all gas-powered furnaces and water heaters with electric appliances, which, of course, won't have electricity for much longer either. And as they note, California, way ahead on this front, can't even keep the lights on already. Here's a quick story from InfoWars. You've probably heard this one before, but we're going to see more of these. Social media is brimming with more and more reports of missing food items at major grocery stores like Kroger across the country. It's a repeat of early 2020 when it was toilet paper and other essentials that ran bare. But now 2023 is seeing a lot of empty shelves, according to a number of reports, many of them with video evidence of lingering or exacerbated supply chain problems. And among them, eggs, which are skyrocketing in price to unprecedented levels, along with the destruction of chickens, turkeys, and anything else that Big Brother doesn't want you to have, protein-wise. Eggs, for example, if you can get them, are between $5 and $6 a dozen in a lot of places. And given that Big Brother wants you to have the mark of the beast and no other options, but they're going to call it a central bank digital currency or CBDC, maybe this one shouldn't surprise us either. Coinbase, as a piece from Zero Hedge, is reducing their workforce again amid a collapse in their stock price, turmoil in crypto land, and broader macroeconomic headwinds. They're announcing the firing of 20% of their workforce. That's about 950 jobs, while the CEO warns of dark times ahead in crypto land. Here's a quick good news, bad news story. Fed Chairman Powell, speaking at a Riksbank symposium in Sweden, didn't comment directly on economic or monetary policy, but did say the Fed should stick to their knitting and that they won't use their tools to promote a so-called green economy. They're not going to be a climate policy maker either. And it seems to have been a message to the socialist left who've been pushing the Fed to fund their Green New Deal, whether directly or indirectly. From there, we've got what I guess I'd call some interesting news today on several fronts. One has to do with a New York anti-constitutional gun control red flag law that's been struck down by the New York Supreme Court. Imagine that. As the Epoch Times reported, New York Supreme Court Justice Thomas Moran ruled on December 22nd of last year that what are called ERPOs, or red flag laws, so-called extreme risk protection orders, explicitly violate the Second and Fourteenth Amendments of the Constitution, said the justice the law, quote, does not sufficiently protect a citizen's rights, unquote, as if the citizen actually even had rights in the state of New York. He added, when viewed objectively, the ERPO's stated goal of, quote, removing weapons from the otherwise lawful possession of them by their owners without adequate constitutional safeguards cannot be condoned by this court. It cannot be stated clearly enough, he said, and evidently he's right, it can't be stated clearly enough, that the Second Amendment is not a second-class right, nor should it ever be treated as such. And interestingly, Professor Jonathan Turley appeared on Fox News and gave what amounts to a surprisingly spirited defense of the actual language of the Second Amendment. And while he's an honest constitutional scholar, folks, he's never been what you'd call a big proponent of the right to keep and bear arms. So this is particularly interesting. He was asked first, given this decision, where do things go from here?
Well, first of all, there's a number of states that do have these types of added burdens to get permits. Those laws are presumptively unconstitutional. It depends upon their language. But the court here is very clear. In fact, clarity is what is so strong about this opinion. And that is, it's clear that you can't put the burden on the citizen to make the case to use a constitutional right. What the court is saying is that that burden belongs with the state or the city to justify limiting a right. And Justice Thomas says, just what other individual rights do we require permits to exercise after showing some particular need for the right? The second area of clarity is that the court says, look, there's no difference between your Second Amendment right in the House and outside the House. This is an important distinction used by various states. And the court said, no, you have a right to possess a gun. The state has to make the case why you shouldn't have that right.
And then he went on to say that basically, when it comes to advocates for unconstitutional gun control, with friends like the state of New York and Governor Sick Kathy Hochul, basically, who needs enemies?
Now, it was interesting that the Governor Hochul in New York immediately said, well, we're just going to start passing new laws, which was somewhat humorous because New York has been actually very good for the gun rights advocates. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've lost some tremendous cases. They just lost one of the biggest cases they have lost in history. So promising more of the same is not necessarily going to be condemned by gun rights advocates. They would like more of the same.
I.e., they just keep doing obviously unconstitutional, admittedly stupid things, and they keep getting slapped down. And then he goes on to talk about one of the transparent ruses that even the idiots on the left should be able to see through. Like, we can prohibit guns in sensitive places. What's a sensitive place? Well, everywhere, of course.
But she noted, you know, we'll just work on what's a sensitive place. And it's one of those baffling moments again. Why would you say that out loud? It's like playing poker with your cards facing outward. I mean, if you immediately after the court strikes down your law, you say, well, we're going to try to create a new loophole using the term sensitive place. Well, that's the court will note that like they noted the history to this law.
Right. I was talking about the history. What is she going to decide? That the sidewalk is a sensitive place?
See, it's really not that hard to figure out.
No, but that's actually the history of New York, is that they passed these laws for this sort of immediate gotcha moment, and then they create bad law from their perspective. It's important to remember that the case before this one, the New York politicians said, again, we're going to fight this all the way to the Supreme Court, even though many of us said that law was also unconstitutional, and they pulled the law, and they ended up pulling the case right before the court could rule on it, and it infuriated some of these justices who felt these New York politicians were just gaming the system and playing voters. And so it's one of this legacy from New York that you would think that voters would begin to say, you know what, we need to be a lot more sensible and a lot more restrained in how we pass these laws.
In other words, you might begin to think people would begin to see through it, but hey, we're talking about post-constitutional America, where education has been dumbed down to the point where people can no longer connect cause and effect, especially in Tyranny Central. which leads the host to actually lay out a bit of New York State history.
And I noted that this goes back to Tammany Hall and Big Tim Sullivan. About a century ago, and they were corrupt, and they were gang overlords, and it was about making sure their gangs doing their bidding had arms, but rival gangs who were not lining the pockets of these Democrat politicians were disarmed by this law, and also there was an issue of law-abiding citizens who had weapons, who were tired of the gun violence in the street, who were targeting these gang members. So it was never about public safety in New York, ever, not based on this law.
Well, there you go. Who could have thought it? It's not about your safety, and no, it's not about your health either, folks. They really don't care if you live, and evidently, and we're seeing that more and more, they prefer that you just up and die. And decrease the surplus population.
No, it wasn't. And the really fascinating thing is that over a year ago, I wrote and a number of people wrote and said, look, this is just breathtakingly unconstitutional. This doesn't come close to what Heller said. And they did what they always did. They created this circular firing squad and decided to litigate this through the federal courts. And now New York has created one of the greatest losses for gun control advocates in history.
Which brings me to a follow-up story on a piece that I talked about yesterday. And essentially, all of us, anybody that was listening then and now, can probably say, I told you so, or we should have known, because this is just history continuing to rhyme over and over again. The hero customer, says Zero Hedge's summary, who shot that armed robber at a Houston taco joint, has been ordered to face a grand jury. And guess what? It's a Soros-funded DA to boot. So you already know how this particular ham sandwich is going to be indicted. Soros-funded prosecutor of the citizenry, DA Kim Ogg. Wonder if that means there's a Nephilim bloodline connection here. Has ordered the hero customer strapped to the train tracks of their impending grand jury choo-choo train. And it turns out, interestingly, Ogg is the same Soros prosecutor who just let that career criminal that was put down by the Texas hero out on bond. Writes Chris Menahan, a grand jury will not decide, or at least be coerced into thinking they decided, whether an armed taqueria customer who shot and killed an armed robber last week in southwest Houston and is now being hailed as a hero will be criminally charged. Investigators said the 46-year-old customer, who police have not identified because he's not under arrest, turned himself in and is cooperating with detectives. Fortunately, the hero has hired an attorney to defend himself and properly exercised his right to remain silent. But his lawyer put out the following statement. My client, who wishes to remain anonymous, was dining with a friend at El Ranchito Taqueria, as has been seen on video, and a robbery suspect entered the restaurant, pointed a weapon at my client and other customers demanding money. In fear of his life and his friend's life, my client acted to protect everyone in the restaurant. And the video pretty well makes that clear, folks. In Texas, said the attorney, a shooting is justified in self-defense, defense of others, and in defense of property. The customer has met with the Harris County District Attorney, SIC, and their office, and investigators with HPD Homicide. He fully intends to continue cooperation with the ongoing investigation, and when that's complete, said the attorney, this case will be presented to a grand jury. We're confident that a grand jury will conclude that the shooting was justified under Texas law. The event has been very traumatic. Taking a human life is something he does not take lightly and will burden him for the rest of his life. For that reason, he wishes to remain anonymous, and due to the overwhelming coverage, we ask the media and the public to respect his privacy. KTRK reports that the thug that he shot was in fact a career criminal who should have been locked up in prison and might be alive if the DA had actually done their job. The medical examiner on Monday identified 30-year-old Eric Eugene Washington as the career criminal and robbery suspect who was put down. Records show Washington had an extensive criminal history and was out on bond during the wannabe robbery. Records show that actually he did rob a few people, folks. It's just that the good guy here returned the money before he went on his way. Records show that in 2015, Washington was convicted of a lesser charge of aggravated robbery and deadly assault and sentenced to 15 years in prison in connection with the shooting death of a 62-year-old. Along with two other men. He was released on parole in 2021, charged with assaulting his girlfriend in December 2022. And the son of the store clerk who was killed said, if that guy who stopped Eric was around 10 years ago, maybe I'd still have my dad. And to paraphrase Chris Minahan's conclusion, our hero never would have been put in this position if the Soros so-called DA Kim Ogg actually locked criminals up rather than aiding and abetting them. Yeah, folks, and trying to string up the good ones who managed to fight back and protect others in the process. That'll do it for now, and may Yahuwah bless you and yours.